Welcome to episode 150 of Conversation Street.
150!
That's right.
Hooray.
It's the only Coronation Street podcast. Yeah, it's definitely the only one that's got to 150.
Yes.
And we're talking today about the episodes that were broadcast in the UK between the 18th and the 20th of May, because that's today.
Yes.
And it's Wednesday and you've got stuff to do at the weekend, sorry.
Yeah, so we have got an early episode.
Everyone.
So yeah,
it's rather be doing podcast.
Yeah, sadly, yeah, we've got to go and do other work this weekend. But anyway, yeah, it's going to be a big week next week in Coronation Street.
Is it? I've got too much work.
I know. We'll manage, I'm sure. Yeah, so episode 250 of the podcast. It is not going to be a special episode, but...
No, every episode's special, so it will be in the tradition of the other 149 episodes.
We can't do something special every time we reach a
milestone
of 50 episodes. So just carry on as normal. But happy anniversary, Gemma.
Oh, thank you, darling.
I haven't got your present.
Oh.
Because you told us we weren't celebrating, sorry.
Whatever. I don't really buy my own presents anyway. Don't worry, I've sorted myself out. Should we do Cory History?
Yes. 150 episodes ago, Conversation Street started, isn't it?
No. 75 years ago, Gordon Clegg was born.
Oh,
the famous Gordon Clegg.
That was Betty's son.
Famously Betty's son. 50 years since the Queen visited Weatherfield. The royal car was nearly diverted down Coronation Street, but instead went down Rosamond Street.
Oh.
Less snipers.
45 years ago, since Bette Lynch became a regular character on Coronation Street, so that's quite important.
Isn't it?
Now embodied by Sean.
Yes, very much so. 15 years since the final appearance of Nita Desai and the first of Maria Sutherland, who Tyrone immediately falls for. Because she's so cute.
So hot. And just like him, just like a female Tyrone she was when she started.
Of course.
She, what was her name? Sammy Agardi put that on Twitter the other day and said, oh, I've just realised.
So, ooh.
15 years. And what amazing things has Maria done in that time?
Wow. I am shocked that she's still in it.
Well, it's a job, isn't it?
Wow.
She has her moments. She had an exciting scene today where bubbles went up her nose, and that's the most exciting thing that Maria's done all year.
God, what an easy bloody job she's got. I wish I had her job. She don't have to do anything. That's our cat. She obviously really likes Maria.
Can I be on the 15th episode, please?
She likes Maria and she doesn't like it when I'm horrible.
Maria's a dog person, Safi.
Sorry, Safi.
You can come in for a cuddle when we podcast.
And sadly, Betty Driver would have been 95 today.
That's not sadly, but, well, sadly
is
she's
it?
There.
Would have been.
We'll celebrate her what would have been Betty Driver's birthday.
95. Good innings if you'd made it, which you didn't. So, strange thing to commemorate, if you ask me.
Sorry, I thought it was important to mention.
I don't know whether I think it's weirder when people celebrate the birthdays of people that are dead or X amount of years since they died. That's just equally as depressing, isn't it?
I don't know how long it's been since Betty Driver died.
No.
But it's been how long has it been since... We saw it was Blanche's funeral like 5 years ago, didn't we? We said the other day. And Betty... died before Blanche.
I love talking about when
no,
people
she didn't.
Died.
No, she didn't. Blanche died first.
Let's not talk about it anymore. Let's talk about what happened on the street this week.
In?
Street Talk.
Okay. Okay, so let's get on with Street Talk this week. We've got only a couple of episodes, but five main storylines to talk about this week. There's the bride and groom, no, gloom stuff first.
Building up to the wedding.
Next week the wedding is, because we had the stag do today. The paternity dispute we had a bit of on Monday, the paternity hearing. And I was, my theory about Kylie suddenly turning up to save the day didn't happen. But she's going to be back soon, so I don't know. But it was quite good that on Monday. A career for Nazir we have next, because it looks like Zidane is hunting for jobs.
Mm.
Still no further with that, although what Cal suggested teaching today, didn't they?
Because if you don't know what to do, be a teacher.
Yeah, that's what I did.
What the people in Coronation Street obviously think.
We had a little bit of the Faye storyline and some of the Nick and his knicker stitching friends as well on Monday. So let's get started with the Bride and Gloom storyline. How's that been this week?
Brilliant. We've not even got the right bit up.
Yes, we have. It's there.
Oh yeah, Steve.
He mysteriously disappeared in today's episode.
Yeah.
We didn't watch Coronation Street straight away today. We watched it at like 8 o'clock or something, and we got a Twitter message through from Silver Bantam, who said, "Is this Stagsy storyline trying to cover up Simon Gregson's mystery illness? Because yeah, he wasn't in it really, was he?
Well, he was in it a little bit.
He was on it a bit, but
Wednesday.
It did seem like, and I was like, oh no, I'm sure it wasn't. But then when we watched it, it did seem very kind of thrown together the way that Steve wasn't actually in the stag do storyline.
It goes to show you, Michael, that when you're ill, you should not go to work, because if even he can take a day off work when he's ill, and they still have to film the programme, and they just rewrite the script, no.
But yeah, it did seem like it was a bit thrown together, because he was ill on, I had a look, it was late March, which was like 8 or 9 weeks ago, and I know they usually film 6 weeks in advance, because there's this big week coming up, maybe the filming schedule changed.
Well, maybe it's all over the place, maybe they film something.
Yeah, exactly, so you could be right, Silver Bantam, because it seemed a bit odd, but I enjoyed that stuff. But Mondays was... more of Liz kind of making that decision to go to Spain, and it did seem
spur
to me
of the moment.
It was completely spur of the moment, and I think it was a little bit out of character for all involved, really, that she would suddenly drop everything, go
I
to
know.
Live in Spain,
especially
and Steve and Rochelle like, okay,
enjoy yourself.
Yeah,
especially considering that it's been her dream to own this pub.
Well, exactly.
And have her name above the door, and, yeah. And she's throwing it all away from bloke.
I can't remember how long she's been in charge of the Rovers now, but it's not been long enough, really. I mean, it's
not for you to go, right, I've had my fill of that.
I know that Liz and Spain have got, like, I mean,
history
together, and Andy's over there and everything, but I don't think it would have taken her that little convincing. But anyway, she's reminiscing at the beginning of Monday's episode about wanting to set up with Tony there one day, and Steve is immediately worried about this, and she's like, no, I'm not rushing off, it's just a mad thought, and I'll be there for you as long as it takes, because he's, I don't know, is he still worried about not having his mum around him, or is it his depression or whatever?
Well, she's more worried about it. I think the point of this scene was that she was worried rather than he was worried.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because it's Michelle, really, that's the one that doesn't want her to go.
Mm. Yeah, well, in the next scene, Steve is, yeah, you're right, he's telling Liz that, look, you don't have to look after me, and if you want to go, then just go. And he says he doesn't want her to put her plans on hold for him.
And she goes, oh, I wish I'd never said anything, I'm not going anywhere, which is completely the opposite of what he wanted her to be like. So then Steve complains to Michelle that Liz thinks he's an invalid and she won't go to Spain. And Michelle says this is the first time she's heard of this, is very shocked to hear that she's planning on doing this.
Yeah. it was quite funny after break, that scene when Carla brought round a sexy basque for Michelle, didn't she?
Yeah.
For the wedding night. And hides it behind the sofa, and then Rover kind of sniffs it out, and Steve gets a little bit excited by
Steve
this. He gets his
it.
Finds his mojo back.
Yeah, exactly.
And he takes Michelle upstairs, and...
And then we have a horrible, excruciating scene where everybody tries to guess why Michelle looks so happy and...
Flushed,
and she... Oh, it's cringy and disgusting.
Do girls do this? You don't talk
no,
about things like that
disgusting.
To with girlfriends. And Steve came in and everyone was like, I don't know what you've been up to. It's just
and
gross.
And Liz is like, yeah, Liz is there. And it's like, no, that's
I know,
my
it's
son.
Even worse with your mum there.
It's horrible.
And Lloyd was at least had the decency to be embarrassed by it all, didn't he? He was like squirming amongst
yeah.
all the girls.
Meanwhile, Michelle had also asked Liz about her plans to flit off to Spain. And she says, oh, I haven't planned anything, but it is possible. I love Tony so, he's so brilliant. And Tony's listening, looking very guilty, because as we know, he's got no intention of going anywhere with Liz.
Yeah, he's the one that's kind of setting her up, isn't he? So he is feeling guilty, but obviously not guilty enough to put the brakes on it.
No. Michelle asked Carla to be a matron of honour, which is a bit late now, but never mind. And
expected.
Then later, Liz tells Michelle and Steve that she and Tony have decided to go to Spain, and she's going to sell her half of the pub to Travis.
This Travis company.
And they're not going to intervene, so it's all cushy. And Steve doesn't seem very fussed about it, and I don't know what is going on in his little brain.
No, because that leaves the Rovers completely in control of
somebody
off screen.
Else they've never met.
Exactly, and they're like, oh, it's
with
fine,
no,
everything will be the same.
Nothing
but...
in writing to say that.
No, I mean, I know he's got his other business to fall back on, but it doesn't seem realistic to me at all that he would so willingly give over the pub and then let his mum do the same.
Well, yeah,
because
he lives there as well.
There haven't even been any, like, unless I'd missed them, like, running up to it, Liz kind of thinking, oh, maybe I shouldn't look after it anymore. It wasn't like she didn't have to deliberate about it too long.
Anyway, on Wednesday, Liz is talking about this amazing trip she's going to have. And Michelle says, when someone else owns everything, what's to stop them from kicking us out? And Liz says, oh, don't worry, they've promised they won't do it. Which in business...
It means nothing.
So Tony then goes into Barley's Buyers and tells Tracy that Liz has agreed to sell her half. And Tracy's thrilled about this. But Tony says, I find it very difficult to watch Liz plan for a future that isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know how when he's going to break this to her and what she's going to do.
Well,
because
I don't know
really,
when...
she could just go... Oh, it's just so complicated.
The right things are moving at the moment. It could well be Friday's episode that... it's all signed over and done and dusted, and it happens then. I don't know.
Well, there's a spanner in the works.
Yes, that's true, actually. I forgot about that.
So, is Steve's stag doing? As we said, he hasn't turned up, and Tony's not going either, because the excuse we're given is Steve's had a panic attack because they've got to go on a minibus, and he doesn't want to go on it, so he's going to go to the cinema by himself.
That's why it seemed a bit like pulled out of the bag at the last moment, didn't it? It didn't seem particularly believable. So, and then all the time during the stag night, nothing gets mentioned about it, and it doesn't get mentioned again, because there's that one scene later on with Steve and Michelle, isn't it? And they don't say, oh, how are you feeling? Have you calmed down or anything? No. It's like not mentioned again, so it was a bit weird.
So, the people on the stag do are Jason, Sean, Lloyd, Gary and Tyrone.
Yeah, so they all go off to
Liverpool on a bus.
Yeah.
Michelle walks in on Carla making surprise bunting for her wedding and complains about Liz selling. And Carla says, oh, well, you'll always have a job here if worst comes to the worst. And she says, oh, it's not the point, it's where we live as well. And Carla says, well, look, don't worry about it. Let's go and get drunk early because it's your hen do. So Lloyd has taken everybody to this very dodgy pub called The Horse and Cart.
Yeah, he says it was one of the ones that he used to go to when he used to live in Liverpool.
And even more adventurous than that, Carl has taken everybody to the Rovers.
Not even the bistro.
Two of the probably worst venues, boring and dull venues.
It was, but Lloyd didn't mean it to be. And I actually thought that however much this storyline with the stag do was cobbled together, I did actually quite enjoy it. And it was almost quite nice to have something this with Steve not there. I quite enjoyed those scenes with the guys.
It let us see more about Lloyd, didn't it?
Well, it let us see a lot about the others, because everyone that went, in a way, are kind of side characters-ish, aren't they?
Yeah.
Tyrone doesn't really ever do anything much. Sean's...
You don't have to list them all. They don't do anything.
No, so it was nice to see them all together. And I think Lloyd did really good. Craig Charles was acting really well during it. He was getting kind of miserable that everything was going wrong. And then
Can I just say, the thing about Lloyd and Steve so far is that we've only really seen Lloyd's reactions to him from Steve's perspective.
Yeah.
As like, he's just being very standoffish and unpleasant and distant.
Yeah,
and now
we get to see, because everyone's moaning about this dreadful pub they brought him to. So Lloyd overhears them and goes off and with his cigarettes and is sad in the docks. And then there were some lovely scenes with him and Tyrone there where Tyrone talks about milking a goat on a school trip and also as a male goat. So I don't know.
Well, Lloyd says, did you enjoy it? And Tyrone says, I think he enjoyed it more than I did. Which is
that
very
just conjures up all kind of images.
Throwaway line. Lloyd says, oh, I'm really annoyed. I didn't realise about the minivan. I haven't been best mates with him for ages. Rah, rah, rah.
Did you believe that either? Because like, I thought that they had kind of made up. And I know, I mean, the whole falling out.
I do agree
was,
with him.
The whole falling out was a bit fake, wasn't it? Like, it didn't seem realistic that they
I
fell
really
out.
I really want somebody to call Lloyd out on his hypocrisy about the fact that just because Steve has got something mentally wrong with him, Lloyd's completely abandoned him because of the stigma of mental illness.
Mm.
But when he was ill, because it was a physical thing with his heart, Steve was still like rallied around him and tried to look after him, even though it was a bit awkward for him because they're both men.
I think
they
he
find
was
it very difficult to show emotion.
I think he's trying to understand it, but he's
no,
just kind
I
of
don't.
Realizing
I think
he's a that they have grown apart, maybe.
And I wish somebody would point out the obvious parallels between the two storylines, because it would illustrate a really important point that mental illness is just as real a thing as physical illness, and that you shouldn't sort of abandon somebody.
No. Well, he's obviously feeling guilty about it as well. I think he's feeling sad and upset, and it's like it's the end of an era for Millennium McDonald.
He doesn't know how to react to Steve. He doesn't know what to say or do or anything.
No, and I think he thinks he's left it too late as well.
From the other perspective, you know, if someone's, you know, someone's had a heart problem or broken their leg or whatever, you can say, oh, that must suck. I can imagine, you know, whereas somebody's got something wrong with their brain, you can't imagine you kind of think that doesn't make any sense because there's, you know, there's just nothing wrong with him.
What makes it worse as well is that Steve's kind of better now, isn't he? He's really close to getting over it. So I think he's got
to
last for a little bit longer.
I think he's just obsessing over Rover like he did over his car.
To try and take his mind off it. Yeah. Well, anyway, Lloyd ends up getting on this big trawler ship, doesn't he? Because him and Tyrone are completely sozzled on, was it whiskey they had there? And he can't make it back to the pub because he's too drunk. So the obvious conclusion to the episode is Lloyd falls asleep on the boat and ends the episode sailing off into the night, which sounds completely silly. And it was really funny. And I thought Craig Charles acted really, really well today. And I would say he's like in Jenny Bradley, kind of underappreciated kind of league of acting, because he was so believable. And it's quite funny to think that Craig Charles was never a chained actor or anything, and he just landed that Red Dwarf job.
But what do you really learn when you train as an actor? I think it's more like making contact, isn't it?
I have no idea. But he did a really good job, and because he could do the sadness and all the comedy and the drunkenness. I like comedy drunk on curry. But although that final scene where he wakes up and he's like staring out to sea, and then the guy comes out of the what's it called, the cabin behind him,
and hurdy gurdy,
and they just stare at each other.
Well, they don't. They both stare off into the distance
for an unusually long amount of time while the credits music starts to play. But where are they going? Because
hurdy gurdy land.
I assume that they're sailing off to
Scandinavia, I thought.
But that's on the wrong side of the country. They're going off to Ireland or something.
Maybe they just go round.
Maybe they'll go off to Ireland and just by coincidence, Lloyd will bump into Michelle's family.
And they'll be and like, they'll you say, can use our passport.
You can come back with us. Yeah. Who knows? But that was quite funny anyway.
Meanwhile,
Jason's getting chatted up by a gay guy in the pub, because it turns out that the horse and cart has turned into a gay bar.
It is the dingiest gay bar I've ever seen. I thought gay bars were supposed to be quite tidy.
There was a reference to his Mr. Gay Weatherfield as well, which I like that little throwback.
When
they got out of the pub afterwards, and so Jason said to Tyrone, why did you have to tell them that I was Mr. Gay Weatherfield or whatever.
Right. The other part of the storyline, have you finished?
No, yes, I've finished about that.
The other part of the storyline is Carla is acting all mysterious, and Michelle's like, what's going on? She says, if this Travis company only owned half of the pub, you'd be all right though, wouldn't you? And she says, yeah, why? And Carla says, I'll buy it. I think I'm going to buy Liz's share, and I'll help you out, but also make a profit at the same time, because Travis wouldn't buy this if it wasn't profitable, which is obviously rubbish. And she says, don't say anything until I know if I've got the money.
So that's a sudden turn of events as well, isn't it?
People are impulse buying, moving on a whim.
Again, I think
important life decisions.
If there'd been, and again, maybe I've missed this, if there'd been more lead up to the fact that maybe Carla was interested in buying or also spreading her businesses out or buying something.
We always say this, but then when they try to sort of sow seeds for things
in advance, it
really feels like you're
dragged
just being
out.
Yeah, hit That's over true. The head continuously with this plot line.
Mm.
I don't think they're very good at doing subtle.
No. Do you think that if Carla owned part of the Rovers, she would be hands-on at all? Or would she just like let Madonna's get on with it?
I think she'd trust Michelle.
Yeah.
To be her proxy.
Well, she'd trust her with everything, yeah. But it'd be quite interesting to have her kind of as the rival to Nick, with everything that's been going on between the two of them.
Sexy rivals.
So it's like she's, because of Nick spending more time with Erica now, and Carla's trying to kind of cut away from him, then, yeah, this seems like, I suppose, a natural kind of way of ending that. That could be quite interesting. But, I honestly don't know what's going to happen with this next week, because it's all going to start kicking off, and I don't know who's going to own it or what. But it's quite exciting developments, I suppose. That was it for that storyline, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah, that was the end of that one.
Did you quite enjoy it? Are you enjoying this build-up?
I guess so, yeah, it's quite interesting.
It's quite interesting.
I feel like it's stupid, because some things I think it's going at like a really slow pace.
Yeah, well, I think the Tracy and Tony stuff is probably taking a little bit longer than it needs to
be. But then in
be.
Other bits, it's like, why is that happening so quickly? Like with Liz going, I'm going to move to Spain.
Yeah, but on the whole, it's building up to something quite exciting. So, paternity dispute then. So we had on Monday the hearing at court with David trying and Callum battling for who gets to give Max his Ritalin every day. And Audrey was... What happened? Audrey's back now, isn't she? So yeah. They were all getting ready. Sarah wasn't there at the beginning, was she? Because Gail's worrying about the fact that she's not there and thinks she's going to swan in with Callum. That's right.
Yeah, that's
and she's
right.
worried about what's going on with Gavin and Michael, but Andy's not even been in it for ages, has he?
No, he's
lying
he's
low at the moment.
Yes.
David asked Gail to lie and say that he was only going on holiday with Lily and Max the other week.
And Gail's like, yeah, of course. And Audrey and Michael are like, what? You're going to perjure yourself in court?
She's like, well, for her son, her dear son.
Then Max comes in and says, oh, I want my pill, where's Colin, blah, blah, blah.
Tell us your theory.
My theory is, okay, spoiler alert, he has to go, Max has to be sent around Callum's a few nights a week at the end of this. My theory is that David is going to send him round with no medication.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
Give him fake like vitamins instead, because Max won't know. Max will know he's supposed to take medication, and he'll be suspicious if he doesn't take it. But if he gives him like a placebo or something, and then he's like,
I think that could happen, and I think that... Well, I don't know, but maybe that'll happen on Friday. So your prediction
that might
would
come be awesome.
Soon. That's quite good because when they had that,
it's a very David thing to do as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. When they had that scene with giving in the tablets, I was like, oh, why are they showing this? They don't usually do things like that. No. But I think that's obviously sowing the seeds for something later.
He did say, I went to go and see Callum. I want to see my dad, which was another reason to have that small scene in. But yes, why show us? Why remind us that he has to take pills? And we also got reminded a bit later on in the actual court case meeting that David had been giving him his medication, and he stood by him during his bout of illness.
Yeah. So anyway, they all turn up at the courts, don't they? Because does Sarah go with Callum at the end? I don't remember.
I don't think they even go.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe they don't. But anyway, Callum's there without his mum, so obviously couldn't be bothered to pay that.
Oh, Sarah, Bethany's got a new bracelet.
Oh yeah, that didn't really come into anything, did it? It was just Gail that gave it to her in the end, but there was suspicion that
it was Callum.
Callum had given her the money, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we also get quite a few people pointing out to Nick that he is in the same position as Callum is, in that he's going to be a father to a child that he's not going to raise as his own, and that he should be sympathetic to Callum wanting access.
That wouldn't work, would it?
Well, it's not really the same situation
not
at all,
really.
Is it?
Not really.
Not similar.
So David at first tries to settle out of court, doesn't he? He's like...
Well, he does. He just tries to go, Callum, look, why don't we just call this quits and you can see him a few nights or whatever. Yeah. Callum says, no. And if you try to tell anyone what happened to me, anything bad about me, then neither of us will end up with Max and he'll be in care.
Mm. So we first see David's point of view in the court. So his solicitor's there saying it wasn't until David come along that Max had stability in his life. He's got his ADHD. David's been giving him his medicine, like you said. He's been holding everything together even when he had a new baby. So things start off looking quite good for David. But then Callum's solicitor pulls out the bag, all of this stuff that Bethany had been feeding Callum about David's demon child days. So he starts talking about, what does he say, about when he pushed Gail down the stairs and when he sent all those birthday cards from Richard Hillman.
It was so stupid and petty and ridiculous, wasn't it? Like, can you just imagine this solicitor going, oh, and then he did this and he was horrible.
I know, the solicitor didn't even say the half of it either.
Gail got her hair cut once and he didn't even say he liked it.
Yeah, so that was all quite funny. And then David starts going, oh, no, it's not. I'm not like that anymore. Max changed me. He made me a better person. Yeah.
It's not what I've done for Max. It's what he did for me. And the judge is like, get out.
Yeah, that judge for the beginning, I almost thought she wasn't even going to have a word because she was just, for the first couple of scenes, just staring there, wasn't she?
She looked like she was so nervous.
Yeah.
She was just like, I am the judge, be the judge in this scene, look like you're paying attention. Oh, crap, is it my turn to speak yet? No, I've completely forgotten. Right, pay attention now. Right, now I'm still talking to myself.
Yeah, but she pipes up and makes him leave in the end. He was stupid doing that because it's exactly the same as what happened when they were doing the mediation, wasn't it? And David started kicking off.
It really annoys me when this happens, and quite often it will happen in a court case where the characters will sort of have an outburst.
Yeah. And then they look bad, don't they? Which is exactly what happened to David.
It's like, oh, we need some drama. Make them have an outburst in court.
Mm. I'm surprised that nothing was made of the fact that, still, and I'm going to keep banging on about this, Callum doesn't appear to have a job or any source of income at the moment. And they didn't...
And also, he doesn't have to pay child support. Should he not have to pay child support?
Mm. So...
That's like the secret weapon of this whole storyline, is that David says, yeah, sure, he can see Max as long as he pays me X amount a week for his upkeep.
They seem to be missing some quite key aspects that I would have brought up if I was on whatever side. Yes. But anyway, they go back into the room later when David's calmed down a bit, and the judge woman says she's going to order a full CAFCAS report on both David and Callum, because it turns out they're both very naughty boys. So Max is going to end up staying with David for a bit, but he's got to go and stay at Callum's house for 2 nights a week for now. Which isn't too bad, to be honest, is it? I mean, David comes away thinking that he's lost.
You think that your child... A judgment hasn't even been made, and he's having to send his kid round there for 2 nights a week. I would be annoyed if I was him. Don't forget, Callum's a drug dealer. Callum's a drug dealer who tied him up in garage and threatened to hit him round the head.
Yes, okay, I believe you. That is true. Yeah, it's also sad because they have a nice little father-son bonding session on the sofa later, don't they, playing their Xbox.
I thought that was a really excruciating scene.
Did you? I thought that was quite sweet.
I was watching it thinking, this was all ad-libbed. It's really awkward.
Oh, I didn't think that at all. I didn't like it at all.
I can just imagine they were all sitting there going, oh, this is gold, this is gold.
Father, son.
It was just awkward.
David tells Max he stinks and sends him up for a shower. And then he's like saying to David, oh, it's the beginning of the end for me and Max. So Callum, later on in the episode, goes and visits Sarah in the Rovers. And she's like, don't rip it in about what happened in court. And she also overheard him having some dodgy phone call about taking somebody's vital organs or something. But of course, she chooses to ignore that because she's just an idiot.
She is, yes. They go to number 8 with Callum in tow for some reason, and David says, you're the one that told Callum all about all my dodgy past, and that's why he needed to bring it up in the meeting. Yeah, and they're like,
then it turns out, no, it was Bethany.
It was Bethany, and she said, sorry, I thought he knew.
Yeah, exactly.
And he says, I did what I had to see my son. Roll on Friday, because I'm the daddy. And then on Wednesday, the only thing from this storyline that we got to see was Bethany complaining that David is ignoring her for some reason, and also that she doesn't like Nick because he is bossy. And Sarah says, at least we've got somewhere to live.
Yeah. So, enjoying this storyline still? Dragging on a bit too long?
I kind of feel a bit like Sarah and Bethany are just, like, there for no reason. The scene's just irritating.
Bethany's been quite pivotal in that, how she's helped Callum to find out all this ammunition against
David. I
guess so,
but he could have found that out from anyone. I don't see the point of them at the moment. You're not going to change my mind. I'm just fed up with them. I think I'm kind of sick. I want them to have their own storyline.
Yeah.
Or go away.
I don't know how long this storyline's going to go on for, because, I mean, it's not going to end once Kylie comes back, is she?
And I don't really like Bethany. I know you like her, but I don't.
No, I'm not a huge fan of Bethany. I like Sarah Lou.
I don't like either of them.
Lucy Fallon's just had her contract extended by another 6 months or whatever, so we're going to be watching her for quite a while to come anyway, so deal with it. But I would hope, though, that if she is going to be in it for another good 6 months at least, surely in that time she will have her own storyline. It's not going to be this storyline carrying on forever.
It's going to be some boring... tearaway teen storyline involving alcohol and drugs and underage sex and God knows what boring rubbish, being rude to a teacher.
Talking of boring storylines about grumpy teenagers, there's Zidane one, however old he's
supposed
to be.
She fancies Zidane, doesn't she? Bethany.
Bethany does, yeah.
That would be a brilliant storyline, those two.
I think luckily the age gap is maybe a bit too big between them. But anyway...
Age means nothing on Coronation Street, it's all made up.
Zidane is going to try and rob Barlow's buys on Monday, isn't he, basically? Because he wants to get his own back on Tony.
That'd literally be the most exciting thing he ever did. So what happens? He doesn't do it.
Leanne catches him.
And Leanne is good at pissing on everyone's parade.
Yes, well, Leanne catching him is what almost gave me the idea to call this storyline Catching Z's, which also adds into the fact that it is so boring, it makes me want to go to sleep. I thought Tony was quite funny, actually, early in the episode, because Zidane has a go at him, and Tony's like, oh, what are you going to do? Set your dead mum on me or something. And usually Tony's obviously quite a serious character, and I quite enjoyed him in making fun of Zidane then. But anyway, Leanne catches him, tells him to... Tony's not worth getting wound up over, and that's kind of it, isn't it? They talk about it over dinner, Leanne and Cal, and... On Wednesday's episode, Cal suggests that Zidane gets a job. And all he can find is selling it behind the counter at McDonald's. So Cal says, be a teacher.
PE
teacher. Which,
Which he wouldn't ever suggest if he knew anything about teaching.
You can't just become a teacher.
Well, also, I wouldn't recommend anyone to be a teacher.
PE teaching is easy. You just have to shout at children all day long.
You're not supposed to throw your colleagues under the bus like that.
You still have to train for a
whole year to be a teacher anyway.
I thought you had, well, you have to have a degree and stuff as well. What qualifications is the Dan got?
Don't know.
I don't even know. Alia's got a degree.
Alia's got a degree, so who knows.
Mm. But it's the storyline is just dull. Rubbish. And Simon, was Simon doing stuff this week or not?
I can't remember. I don't know.
He was in it for a bit, but again, not doing anything interesting. So let's move swiftly on from there to the baby storyline, where Miley gets her birth registered on Monday, doesn't she?
Yeah, Tim, Faye, Jackson, and Jackson's mum all go to the register office to put him on the certificate. And meanwhile, Sally and Anna are having kind of a face-off because Anna starts tidying up Sally's house for some reason.
I missed that. I'm sure they must have explained it, but I don't know why Anna was tidying up Sally's house.
Jackson gets annoyed because there isn't a middle name and he doesn't like the name Miley, which is right.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, Jackson's a pretty stupid name, to be honest. Maybe he's like, I've had to live the last 12, 13 years with a stupid name.
And I know, it's a burden. Anyway, Sally and Anna have an argument about how to store wine glasses.
How do we store ours? Rim up.
Sounds rude.
I know. That's why I said it. It wasn't. It has rim ups. Anna was rim up. Sally's rim down.
Is it?
I thought so.
I thought it was the other way around. I think Anna said that you get dust in them.
I thought Sally was. Oh no.
I don't know. I just know our cupboard's not got nice enough. Our cupboard's not clean enough for you to
get dust, whichever way you dust
if
it's upwards.
Clean it when you get it out of the cupboard.
Rhyme if it's downwards.
And you don't
I thought they were quite funny scenes between Sally and Anna, because I like Sally lording it over people, and having someone lording it over Anna was just a bonus. But anyway,
Sally makes some shepherd's pie, but refuses to acknowledge that it's her signature dish, which she says is actually cheese souffle.
Not spicy lamb cobbler.
It's Herbie lamb cobbler.
Yeah, that's basically as well, isn't it?
And then they talk about they're going to have a christening at some point.
Yes.
And then
drama around at the christening, I'm sure.
That's it.
Well, Ali and Santa make up at the end.
Blah, blah, blah.
They get Tim to wash up the pots.
Hilarious. Nick and the Knicker Stitcher.
What happened there? Nothing really.
Carla's getting Michelle's dream canapes from Nick, and Leanne thinks there's something going on with them. And Erica comes in and says, I want to talk to Nick, but he looks busy. And then she breaks it up by going on about all these appointments. And she says, when Carla leaves, she says to Nick, what's going on? And he says, oh, don't worry, we're just friends. So Carla goes over to pay for the canapes and says, oh, don't let him give me those samples for free, because this is a gift from me, not from him. And she says, what do you think will happen between those two? And Leanne says, I don't know, but if anyone has any feelings to Nick, they should declare it right now. And Carla says, I think it's already too late.
Do you think that there's a chance that Nick and Erica will kind of get together? Because they couldn't keep their hands off each other the last two times.
And then realise that they're not suited to each other and it's just a fling. I think they're being really sensible.
It was two flings, wasn't it?
I think they're being really sensible, though. And just saying, look, we're adults.
Yeah. It's sad for Carla. Although well, she's got something else to distract her attention now.
I don't want her to go out with Nick anyway. I'm sure they will still go out with each other.
Yeah.
Nick and Erica go round to number 8 and Gail's very horrible.
Yeah, saying that she's using Nick.
Yeah, and then...
she's just stressed out about all the court stuff though, isn't she? Too fair to her.
And then they go off for a drink and a sleepover.
Yeah, they go agree to have a sleepover together, as in they're going to sleep in separate beds, but already it's showing that they're getting closer. Mm. We didn't mention it, but Sophie and Maddie are going to move into each other. In together.
Yeah,
apparently.
Maddie says Sophie is too obsessed with Jenny, it's not good for their relationship, and that they should move out away from the situation.
I don't think that they will. I think that something else is going to happen, something involving Jenny, quite possibly.
Do you think?
Well, probably. I mean, I think it's all tied into the Jenny storyline, isn't it?
They need to move out anyway, though, don't they? It's a bit awkward to be living with your dad.
Who's living there at the moment?
I don't know.
Is it just Kevin and Jack and the girls?
I don't know.
I think it is.
They don't live anywhere. It's all lies.
Everyone
I've never
always
seen anyone
lives together.
Asleep, so I think they all go back to pods.
Speaking of pod... No, we're on a podcast. I don't know where I was going with that.
And it's got segments.
I was trying to do something.
And
kind
this
of...
is the end of this segment. So we're going to move on to the next segment.
No, we've got to do a class. Who was your character of the week this week?
Oh.
I'm going to say Lloyd. just because I thought that Craig Charles was the best actor this week. And I know Lloyd wasn't in it much, but I really did feel sorry for him. And he did it with the few scenes that he had. He made just, like you said earlier, see his side of the story and everything. And I thought it was all quite funny, everything that happened with Lloyd there. So he's going to be my character of the week.
I'm going to pick Sally, just for her ridiculous behaviour on Monday, saying that cheese souffle was her signature dish.
Sally's always a good one to go for.
And saying that just it's not the frequency at which you make it, but rather the occasion for which it is prepared that makes it your signature dish.
Yes. Right.
Which is correct.
Yes, yeah, so I thought that was not too
What's
bad.
What's your signature dish, Michael?
Marmite sandwiches.
Mm-mm.
I'm very good at those. That was not a bad Coronation Street, but I am looking forward to next week's one.
Well, we don't know, do we? Because we haven't seen Fridays, and it could make or break this week.
Well, it's all building up to something, so I don't think it's going to be too bad.
If there's
a run-up to something, I think. I want to know what's going to happen to Lloyd. I'm really curious to find out what happens with him.
How are you going to do? Because you haven't got your passport, you haven't got any money. What are you going to do? What would you do?
I don't know.
I mean, I always imagine myself, I could probably cry and get out of it somehow just by being a girl, which is very sexist, but unfortunately does work.
I mean, the boat driver captain man could just turn back and go back to Liverpool.
Depends on how far out he is, isn't it?
Yeah, I think they made it, I mean, because it was dark when he woke up, wasn't it? So it was like he's been out for a few hours.
No, because the boys were walking back to where the ship was, and you were kind of supposed to think that was the same time.
Well, they were talking a bit about the fact that I think Tyrone couldn't remember exactly where it was or something.
Yeah, he obviously got lost, so it must be an hour.
Yeah.
Or two.
How far can you get in an hour on a boat?
I don't know. It depends on how many knots you're going.
Yes, it does. Right, let's
move on to classic character profile time.
Okay. It's classic character profile time, and this week on Coronation Street, we've seen David fighting for custody of Max, the son that is not really his. And that put me in mind of another character who's had to fight for a child that didn't originally spring forth from his loins.
Did you ground there?
Yeah. Ashley Peacock this week is our character of the week, because he had Joshua, and I bet some people have forgotten that Joshua wasn't actually Ashley's, but we'll get to that when we do. So Ashley Peacock, he was born on the 24th of January 1977 and sadly died on the 6th of December 2010 Was it the live episode that he died in? I can't remember if it was the live one or...
Events surrounding it.
Yes, that was like the big climax of the tram crash, wasn't it? His dad, of course, was Fred Elliott, and his mum was Kathleen Gutteridge. He married twice. He had Maxine Heavey in 1999.
Punch
him above his weight. I was just going to say something like that. And then Claire Casey in 2004, which is... Much more his style, wasn't it? He only had one child, Freddie Peacock, because like I said, Joshua wasn't him, but he was like the, I suppose the, he's still the dad in the same way that David Freddy is the dad to Max, isn't he? But Joshua actually raised from birth, which David obviously
just
hasn't
like
for Max.
Little chick.
Ashley first appeared on the 1st of February 1995, which was really close to when I first started watching it, and he made his last appearance on the 8th of December 2010. So when they had the tram crash, it was all set on over like one or two nights, wasn't it? But it was obviously on TV every night that week. So he made an appearance a few days after his character actually died. All in all, Ashley was in 1,271 episodes of Coronation Street, and he was the 40th most featured character in the history of the show. Ashley was played by Stephen Arnold, who's now making a living on Gala Bingo adverts.
Oh, gosh. Hustle somehow, isn't he?
He first appeared in 1995, but he was only in a couple of episodes that year, I think. And if you haven't seen that, or it's been a long time, you must go and do some Google image searches of Ashley from 1995, because he's just like a teenager then. He looks so different.
Just a little
Ashley. And he's doing bicycle deliveries for Fred, because back at the time, Fred Elliott was not Ashley's dad. Well, he was officially not his dad, he was his uncle. And Ashley, we always just call him Uncle Fred. He had a funny voice, didn't he, did Ashley? I think that was his defining character trait.
Voice. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm talking about my Uncle Fred, is Ashley's thing. But he didn't do much that year. His first main storyline that I've been able to find, at least, was in 1996, when he dated Kelly Thompson, the childminder who was hired by Ken to look after Daniel, which was Ken's son that had just been born around them. Sadly, Ashley and Kelly broke up when she headed up to Scotland with Daniel, who was taken there by his mum, Denise. I don't remember that storyline at all, but I assume I watched it at the time. He moved out of his mum's house in 1996 and lodged with Dom Brennan. Dom Brennan was the this crazy one-legged taxi driver back then who had been married to Ivy Tilsley, but that was around the time that she died anyway, and he was being a bit psychotic, and he was Mike Baldwin's other arch enemy as well, which comes into play in 1997.
So, in an act of revenge against Mike Baldwin, decided to set fire to the factory, and he framed Ashley, who got arrested, but then he was released without charge.
Yeah, he was treacherous, and he dobbed Ashley in, but it wasn't even him did it.
Then, in also the same year, he started dating Maxine Heavey, who, for some reason, didn't report him to the police for stalking her, and actually even moved in with him.
I can't remember what the situation was around Ashley and Maxine going out with each other, because she was like this stunning supermodel type, wasn't she?
She had legs going out to her ear holes.
Totally, totally. I mean, gorgeous, I suppose he couldn't believe his luck.
Skinny.
And Ashley was just like
besotted.
Joe Bloggs, normal kind of
weird voice.
Yeah, kind of a
but
bit.
But it wasn't all a marriage made in heaven, even though they weren't married yet. They split up because he got involved with a homeless teenager, Zoe Tattersall.
Yeah. He helped her to get custody of her daughter Shannon, because she'd sold Shannon to Julie Mallet at the time, because desperate times calls for desperate measures when you're homeless. She eventually ran off with a cult, the cult of Nirab, which was one of Coronation Street's weird storylines in the Bryan Park era. And but that was after Shannon died of meningitis. So things were on the rocks a bit there between Ashley and Maxine, because he was getting a bit too close for comfort to Zoe. In 1999, I don't know what happened, I don't think Ashley did anything in 1998, but in 1999, there was a major turning point for Ashley's life when he discovered that his Uncle Fred had actually been his dad all this time.
Dun, dun, dun. But then who's his uncle?
I don't even remember. I can't remember whether he had an uncle. That was shocking revelation, that was. I mean, it's a very soapy thing to do, but John Savardin and Simon Arnold, I thought they had a really good chemistry together, and it was really nice to think of them being father and son.
It was, yeah.
They had good on-screen chemistry for sure.
Because
so the story was that he'd been raised by Fred's sister Beryl Peacock as his because his biological mum Kathleen had been a reluctant mother at such a young age, so it was all kind of covered up. But for whatever reason, I think Fred might have said it to Audrey or something like that, and then eventually he decided to confess to Ashley, so it all came out. Now, contrary to Fred's wishes, Ashley tracked down Kathleen that year as well, and he was quite bitter towards her at first for making him live a lie, basically, for the first however many years of his life, but they did grow closer. And the year tied off nicely when he got married to Maxine in September.
In 2001, after months of trying for a baby, Ashley and Maxine discover that Ashley's reproductive system needs surgery.
I've been talking a lot about reproductive systems this week, because it was sex education in my class again. The time has come again, so we've been using all sorts of
naughty words
and sensible scientific words for them. Yeah, that was quite funny, because Ashley and Maxine were basically bonking all the time. It was a bit like the Michelle and Steve stuff this week, that kind of everybody knew what they'd been up to, and Ashley was getting a bit tired out after all of this trying for a baby, and Maxine was like, no, we gotta go and do it, and she was like looking at, you know, like looking at the calendar and when am I most fertile and everything, and Ashley, get home from work now, I need to take you upstairs right now for it. But yeah, it turned out that he had something wrong with his bits, so he went to a hospital to get it all sorted. But while he was in there, Maxine got drunk and slept with Dr. Matt Ransden, and she got pregnant.
No.
And this is where I really started not liking Maxine. I mean, I was sad when she died and everything, but I didn't think that she was the sort of person that would leave Ashley, because even though they totally weren't compatible, and I think sort of later on in his life, Ashley admitted that he never really thought he was suitable for Maxine, and maybe they didn't really love each other, but I didn't like it that she went off and slept with Matt.
No, naughty girl. 2002, Joshua was born in April, and Maxine let Ashley think he was the father, but she eventually admitted the truth, and he felt betrayed But he agreed to forgive her and raise Joshua as his own.
Yeah, because I think Matt Ramsden and his wife had gone off and left the programme then, so he was all right to raise Josh as his own.
Couldn't come back.
Yeah.
2003, she was murdered.
She was murdered by Richard Hillman. She was clocked on the head.
Fashion.
Well, you know why she wouldn't have got murdered if she had stayed at the party.
Exactly.
She should have stayed at the party.
Yep. He was devastated and all alone. So he was a single father with two young sons to raise. One.
Yes.
He hired nanny Claire to look after him or them, and they soon fell in love.
I never really warmed to Claire. Did you like her?
Yeah, you know I did.
Did I? No, I can't. I honestly can't remember.
I liked because Claire.
She was definitely more suitable for him than Ashley was.
She felt like a real person to me.
She did. They tried to make her comedic sometimes, didn't they? Like when they made her a bus driver and stuff. But I just thought that she was a bit of a ruination of Ashley, really. And as soon as they started dating, he got less and less interesting.
But 2004, they got married and they had a Christmas wedding. That was probably one of the nicest looking Corrie weddings.
Yeah, because they had all the snow, of course, yeah. And she had a big...
I mean, I know it was only 11 years ago, but... It's not like dated or anything, those photos.
No. Was that the wedding as well where they had all the other butchers and they like held up their meat cleavers as an arch for them to go under? It was quite sweet, and so they did make a nice couple, but yeah, I just think they were boring, and I think the fact that we're rushing through the years so quickly showed that Ashley didn't really do very much. There was a silly storyline in 2005, which I remember very well. For some reason, Fred decided on his behalf that he needed to become a boxer to fight against Marvin Maddox, who was the son of this rival butcher, Eddie. And it was, do you remember those two? Because they both were like...
They were like...
clones of Fred and Ashley.
I do remember that.
Because this Eddie was also like big, fat, bald bloke. And I don't think... Marvin looked like Ashley, but I think he might have had a silly voice or something. So he was like in the back room of the around the back of the butcher's, like punching the hanging meats or whatever, and it's all
like Rocky,
very silly. And then it had a silly ending as well, where they all the Corrie residents were there at the boxing place, ready to watch them fight. And then there was a riot that broke out amongst the spectators, and Ashley and Marvin agreed on a tie. And I just remember them like shaking hands there, and in the background, everyone was rioting and fighting over each other. It was silly. Anyway, in Christmas that year, Claire revealed that she was pregnant.
What?
I know. 2006, Ashley was contacted by Matt Ramsden, and he decided that he wanted contact with Joshua. So this is what made me think of it, because it's a bit like Callum, except that Matt Ramsden wasn't as evil or Camp as Max as Callum is. So the case eventually goes to court, but Claire persuaded Ashley to let Matt see the baby with limited access. So that was all sorted fairly easily. And then Matt ended up delivering Claire's baby later on that year. And they called him Thomas at first, but he was later renamed Freddy because that was sadly the year when Fred died.
Yeah, he died of a heart attack.
That's nearly coming up to 10 years. I can't believe it.
And Ashley took over the butcher's shop.
Yeah, yeah. So there were lots of funny scenes with him there and Kirk and everything.
I think it's sad that his legacy has now fallen to ruin and there's no butcher shop.
It's a community centre.
There's no butcher shop. There should be.
I don't think there could be, because if there was going to be a butcher shop set in the butcher shop, then you would never be able to get a character so perfectly suited to butchering as Fred Elliot. I mean,
but don't you think it's sad that their little family legacy is gone? I do.
Well, it was left there for like how many years? 3 years after... Ashley died because they couldn't decide on Corrie what to do with it.
No.
But it is really sad. But any new butcher would just be compared to Fred. I mean, Diggory Compton, when he was the baker, he was like compared to Fred.
Yeah,
I think.
Well, he was
like,
a bit like him though. So
exactly.
It's a fair comparison.
But yeah, sad that it is now gone. There's no trace of them left. But anyway, spoiling it. 2007. Ashley, and again, this is where I thought a character was acting out of character a bit, kissed Claire's friend Casey and tried...
Yeah, it's very unusual for Claire to have a friend.
I think this was somebody when Claire was working as like a Samaritan or something like that, and she was a single mother or something but that she got involved with.
Was she a good Samaritan or an evil Samaritan?
I think she was a good Samaritan.
Okay, cool.
So Ashley, yeah, kissed Casey and then tried to convince her to forget it ever happened. However, Casey was a bit of a nut job, Jenny Bradley style nut job. She manipulated Ashley into having an affair with her. So, like, he had his hands tied.
Couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Just fell on her.
Casey became even more and more obsessed with Ashley, and Claire eventually discovered what had been going on before kicking Ashley out.
Good. Kick him to the curb.
Yeah.
Until 2008, when they got back together. Because they were having financial problems, they agreed to a house swap with the Websters, which gets them a bit more cash but loses the conservatory.
I know. Sally Gogg. Sally owns that conservatory. She worked
did,
hard
didn't
for it.
And she appreciates it better. Yeah, she knows what to do with the conservatory. I would have no idea. 2009, Claire suffered a miscarriage and a near-fatal blood clot and decides she doesn't want any more children and convinces Ashley to have a vasectomy.
Yeah, Corey comedy vasectomy, everybody thinking it's hilarious and terrifying. I can't remember whether he...
I think
whether he went
lie
through there
or
first.
Say.
Yeah, maybe. I can't remember. No, I don't know, actually. I don't know what happened. But I think he got it eventually. Anyway, 2010, the Peacocks got into an argument with the Allahans because Addy was injured whilst under Claire's care. Because wasn't she a childminder or something
yeah.
she turned into? She had a load of jobs. It turned out, anyway, that it was Simon Barlow's fault for fighting with him. But the ordeal made Claire want to move away. Because her mum was living in France or something, I think. So she tried to convince Ashley to go to France. And I'm not surprised at Ashley that he was like, no. Because he's very, very kind of salt of the earth, kind of British.
I would love to move somewhere, but only if you said to me, we're coming back on X date. I wouldn't be able to just move to another country and stay there.
I don't think Ashley could even cope with France. He can barely understand what he's saying with his English accent. But she was like quite demanding about this. But he ended up agreeing anyway. There was a funny scene where they were having a romantic meal together and he had indigestion, but he had let Claire believe that he was having a heart attack to try and convince her not to take him to France. She found out the truth and said that she was going to France without him. But they reconciled at Jack Duckworth's funeral and he agreed to go to France with her.
Oh, good.
So they were all getting ready to go to France when tragedy struck on the 6th of December. 2010. Oh yeah, we're in 2010, aren't we? Yeah, he was in the joinery at was it Peter Barlow's stag do, I think. There was a tram crash and the whole joinery exploded, and he was left there in the room with him and Peter and Nick. He realized that he was pretty badly hurt by this because he coughed up
absolutely
blood.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Why? He held up the ceiling. What's wrong with
absolutely
that? He was a superhero,
ridiculous.
Ashley was, when he died. Nick and Peter could escape, and Ashley was like, Doc,
go
God,
me.
Save yourself.
I've knocked my elbows out, and as soon as I am popping, we're all going to die.
And we saw, that wasn't even the last, that was the last we saw of him, but then when the tram crash stuff had all died down a bit, Claire discovered that she had a message on the answer phone from him, so we heard Ashley going, oh, Claire, love you, I'll be out soon, or whatever. So
Jesus.
It's a sad ending, but at least he went out a hero.
Whatever.
Which was more exciting than anything else he'd done the previous few years. So, it was revealed in April 2010 that year that the Peacocks would be leaving, and they'd come to a mutual decision with the producer at the time. Simon had said, is it Simon or is it Stephen? What's his name?
I don't know. You can scroll up if you really want to know.
Simon Arnold. I've even forgotten what the actor's called now. Stephen Arnold. Where did I get Simon from? He said that he felt ready to go. I'd love my time in Corey. I cried when I left.
No, that's terrible.
Because it meant so much to me.
No,
but it was time for Ashley to go.
Anything like him.
I was working part-time.
Thank
just
you.
4 months of the year. And it got me down.
What are you talking about?
Well, yeah, but they didn't really have much to do with Ashley. I'm not surprised
that
he had 4 months.
Do you get paid? Do you get paid? Like a normal... I bet he gets paid
a
normal wage
for
that.
I don't know how it works.
You can do jobs on the side, like pantos, and earn your money like a proper actor.
He said that the character was fading away and the writing was on the wall. I'd lost a sense of purpose. I was getting paid less.
Okay.
I spent days walking my two Rottweilers to fill the time. I'm ambitious and I wanted to be working. I was worried I was doing my job wrong.
And since then, he's...
not done anything. So yeah, he came to a mutual decision about
it. He said, "The one bright spot was a fantastic day. Way I was eventually written out. Ashley joined Coronation Street as a wimp and left as a hero. I was made up, delighted that Ashley was being killed off. It was the end of the chapter and I'm moving on."
That's quite a nice way of looking at it, because he was a complete wimp. I mean, most of his life he was a bit of a wimp, because he wasn't like one of the lads or anything particularly, was he? I mean,
he was a laddie kind of guy.
He was friends with like with Tyrone and Steve and everything, but he was always like the sensible.
They're not exactly macho, are
kind
they?
Kind of sensitive kind of one. No, not really. I mean, nobody is on Conway,
no,
are they?
Not no, really. Only
none
villains.
Of them are Danny Dyers, are they?
No.
Yeah, so that was the end of Ashley, but I think I wasn't too fussed. I think I was in two minds when I knew that he was going to leave, because like he'd been on Corrie for, what, 15 years? And I think when I heard that he was going to leave, it's like, no, you can't get rid of Ashley, because he's been in it so long and he's part of Corrie's institution. But actually, thinking about it, I think his time had come on the programme.
I'd hang on then, now I'd hang on.
I kind of liked him because he was a nice guy, but he wasn't needed anymore, honestly. And I think it was a bit like Curly. He ended up with a boring woman. I know you like her, sensible woman. And then from there, the plots were just a little bit dull. I thought they was great with Maxine, and it was like hope for all nerdy guys everywhere that one day you'll meet somebody lovely and marry them. And then I did. I met you.
Oh, I am your Maxine. I hope
you're
I don't
Maxine.
Get horribly
you're
murdered
get hit over the head with a crowbar.
And commemorated with a bench.
Yeah. When he left, he was supposedly going into a job in the building trade. I don't know whether he did or not. I think he did a bit of theatre work since leaving. And then, yeah, like I said, he's currently with Sunita on Gala Bingo adverts. So
hey, he probably earns about the same amount
times.
Of money.
I don't know what John Samadon's doing these days either. They should team up and do a double act on stage or something somewhere.
Oh, God.
Try and get some of that old Corrie nostalgia back. I don't think he got any awards when he was on Coronation Street. I got down here that he was nominated for the most popular actor in the 1999 National Television Awards, but didn't make a big enough splash to actually get it.
Oh, well.
I thought he was all right as an actor. He was a caricature, and he's a memorable character.
Yeah.
Because in Corrie, to be memorable, quite often you need to have something...
outlandish.
And different about you. Like, Fred obviously had his booming voice and is repeating himself, and Ashley's just had his silly voice, didn't he? And that's what made him memorable. So he'll always live on in her heart, I suppose.
Indeed.
But now he's with Maxine in heaven.
Ah, oh, on the bench, looking down, waiting for Claire.
Exactly.
Who's on a fugitive on the run.
Yeah, so that is it for Ashley. Started off as a wimp, went out as a hero. Was a bit interesting partway through, but his time had come. Is what we think, is what I think. Is it what you think?
No, I don't, yeah.
Yeah, so if anyone wants to spring to the defence of Ashley, please do let us know. He was all right.
He was fine, and now he's gone.
They're important enough to be featured on a Coronation Street podcast.
For about 5 minutes now. That's the end of Ashley's character profile. The end, and now we're going
to
do the cabin.
He is a hero because he's on the episode 150 of the podcast.
No, we're
well
doing
done,
the cabin
Ashley.
Now.
The cabin.
That's
go.
That's the end.
News time. Sad news this week. British Soap Awards have happened, and
what a washout!
Bit of a washout for Coronation Street this week. And to be fair, it wasn't unexpected, was it? And I think when we had all the nominations for it a couple of months ago,
weren't we saying why would they win this award for that?
Yeah, they didn't. I don't think some of the awards they were put up for were some of the episodes or the characters aren't necessarily the best choice. It wasn't like Anna nominated as best female or something like that. It was just a couple of things that, and like the minibus crash, I don't think got nominated for anything. And they were standing up against things like the Who Shot Lucy storyline and EastEnders. And EastEnders completely swept the board, like got 8 awards, and Corrie just walked away with 1. Good on Sally Denever for winning the best comedy performance. I think that really
she
is
was
deserved.
My character of the week.
Yeah, I think that is definitely deserved. I think everybody loves Sally, don't they? I don't think
she's really come into her own.
I've never heard of anybody that's sick of Sally, and don't think I've ever seen anybody saying Sally and Tim get rid of them or whatever. Because since pairing up with her, she's been even funnier. Just the whole snobbiness, they really know how to write for her really well.
Yeah, they do.
So well done to her for getting that award. And
best thing that happened to her was when Kevin left.
Yeah. Anne got her award, didn't she? Her posthumous Outstanding Achievement Award.
Do you think that people are going to write in now and say they don't like Sally?
Write in
if you don't like Sally.
Everybody likes Sally. But better luck next year, Coronation Street.
I'm sure they're going to have to step their game up.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because they got their BAFTA just like 2 weeks ago or so.
It's almost
Stuart Blackburn was like, everything's fine with the show.
Sort of as though awards shows don't mean anything and everyone's got their own opinion about things.
Well, I think the British Soap Awards are partly voted on by the public and partly by panel of judges, and the BAFTAs are just panel of judges, and all that these Stenzers fanboys are saying, oh, well, BAFTA was just awarded by a load of people that probably don't even watch the programme, and EastEnders was won the British Soap Awards, and that was voted for by the public, the people who know what they're talking about.
It's all swings and roundabouts of the soaps. They're one year one of them's riding high, and the next year the other one
is. Well, Corrie still is ahead of EastEnders in the race, isn't it? So at least it's got that.
It is.
But anyway, British Soap Awards are on tomorrow night, on Thursday night, and I think this is going to be the first year in quite a while that I'm not even going to bother watching them. Usually we'll record them and I'll like
skip forward
through the Hollyoaks and the EastEnders and everything, and I'll watch the Corrie bits, and but I don't think it's even worth it. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing Sally pick up her award, and I'd be interested in seeing the Anne tribute, but I think it'd just be a bit too depressing to fast forward through all the coronation, all the EastEnders stuff.
I want an award.
You cannot have an award. There's no podcast award for soaps. But maybe Coronation Street will be more successful in our second news item, which is the TV Choice Awards are coming up. You can vote for that at www.tvchoicemagazine.co.uk/awards up until midnight on the 5th of June. Their shortlist is going to be announced on the 30th of June. So they've got this, you know how they do with the long list, and they have like a million people you can vote for, and then they're shorten it down.
I know what a shortlist is.
Thanks. Who's nominated, Gemma?
You can vote. You can vote.
Yes, you can.
The best soap actor, Simon Gregson, Ben Price, or Jack P. Shepherd?
Let's scratch Ben Price off of that straight away. Simon Gregson versus Jack P. Shepherd, who would you go for there?
Well, it's... Oh, I don't know.
It's got to be Jack, hasn't it? I think Jack's brilliant.
I love him, yeah.
But I've got a feeling that...
It'll be Simon Gregson.
Simon Gregson would win over that.
His
harrowing depression storyline.
He's also got a dog, so... Oh, I don't know.
But Jack P. Shepherd really is awesome. Interesting that David Nielsen's not mentioned on there, because for the past couple of years, for everything he's done with Roy, he's just been like an automatic entry onto these lists, hasn't he?
He's done anything for a while.
He's not, but that doesn't always mean everything, because things stick in people's minds. So, yeah, I vote for Jack P. Shepherd for that one.
Best soap actress, Jane Danson, Kate Ford, or Alison King?
Alison King just appearing on all of these lists. Now, obviously scratch off Jane Danson straight away, although I mean she has won a fair
I've
share awards.
I don't have anything against Jane Danson. I feel sorry for Jane Danson having to play Leanne, the most boring character apart from Maria.
I think often these storylines where you're voting for an actress, it's difficult not to be tainted by your view of the character, isn't it?
I don't dislike Jane Danson, but I don't rate her as an actress either.
She has, when she's been in good storylines, though, people have raved about her, haven't they? And there have been times in Corrie history where she's been, like, a huge character in the show. She has done a really good job. But, I mean, compared to Kate Ford, because I love Tracy so much, and Alison King, it's interesting that Kate Ford's nominated, because she is, among some people, she's quite unpopular, isn't she?
Yeah.
And people that want to get rid of Tracy. She's been really interesting to watch. I mean, Carla's gone off the board a little bit, I think, since Peter died in the wedding and everything. But Kate's really stepped up her game, or the character of Tracy has. So as much as I love Carla, I would vote for Kate Ford for that one. Would you? Because Carla, I know, is one of your favourites.
Yeah, she's not impressed me recently. Mm. I do like the character, but I don't know if she's good on the show, if you know what I mean, at the moment.
Mm.
Best soap newcomer, you can vote for Lucy Fallon as Bethany, Oliver Farnworth as Andy, or Sean Ward, who's Callum.
I'll say it now, I don't think any of those are going to win the award.
No, I don't.
I don't know what the other soaps have got, but I mean, Lucy Fallon, I don't think she's impressed enough people yet to win as Bethany. Andy, similarly, I quite like Andy. I mean, I'm disappointed that he's not been in it for a while, because I think he's doing quite a good job of him, but I don't think he's big enough or made a big enough impression to probably even make the shortlist, to be honest. Sean Ward has been huge in Coronation this week, and this year, and I did hate him at first.
He is like a campy panto villain, isn't he?
Yeah, I never thought I would say this, but actually I would vote for him.
He would be an awesome Jafar.
Yes, he would. Well, you know, Panto is probably beckoning for him at some point, so who knows. But yeah, get your votes in. You've got a couple of weeks to do that. And fingers crossed Corrie does a little bit better than they did at the British Soap Awards. But as you said, it's all swings and roundabouts. It will be on top again sometime.
Speaking of earning money in your spare time doing Pantos, there are other things you can do if you're a an actor or actress, mostly actress, yeah, who needs to pick up some extra cash for her holiday.
Well, this article that I found on the Manchester Evening News was about
this
all
is fascinating.
All different celebrities, and it was that's why I thought I'd put it in, because it's not there were all different celebrities mentioned, but I just picked out the Corrie ones. But basically, they did an article where they were asking a load of councils around the north about how much they have paid for various stars to appear at certain functions.
Awesome.
And the Corrie ones that are mentioned are Jenny McAlpine first. Now, last year, she became an ambassador for the Bury Council run I Will If You Will scheme. And
what
I was going to look what up
it
is. And
I
was going to, and then I forgot. So I'll keep waffling on. Will you find out what the I Will If You Will scheme is? But she was paid £10,000 to be
the
ambassador
of
that. Don't you do those things out of the goodness of your heart?
I have to say, looking at the rest of the list, I don't think I'd get out of bed for most of these. But I would get out of bed for 10 grand.
Yes, I think I would as well. Nikki Sanderson, who obviously in Hollyoaks at the moment used to play Candice, she was also an ambassador for that. And she was only paid £2,000, so...
What was that for?
I Will If You Will.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, Nikki
it's
Sanderson
fitness.
Was paid
it's,
five times less
to
than
get
Jenny.
People doing exercise.
Ah, okay, apparently. That's quite interesting, because Jenny McAlpine has lost a lot of weight and stuff, hasn't she? So that's quite
it says,
a good face
I Will
for
If You Will is all about getting us ladies of Bury moving and having a laugh while we do it. We believe everyone can try something new. Get active and have fun at the same time. If you agree, make a pledge. We need super passionate ladies to become I Will If You Will champions. If this is you, get involved. I will, if you will, pay me 10 grand.
Yeah, I would do that. I would put on a wig and pretend to be a woman for that I Will If You Will, so only pay me that much. The only other Corrie ladies.
No.
Oh, go on.
Yeah, Georgia May Foote.
Yeah.
£500 to switch on the Radcliffe.
Oh, it doesn't really compare to £10,000, does it?
The Radcliffe Christmas lights. Do you know, it's almost insulting, isn't it? It's almost a bit like...
But it is only switching on the Radcliffe Christmas lights.
I know, but I'd almost
lights.
Be like, could you... No, I'll just do it for free. Screw you at £500. I can't even buy a handbag for that.
That was a couple of years ago as well. Maybe if she knew that her time on Corrie was coming to an end, she would have asked for a little bit more.
But maybe it's like, well, no, we're not gonna pay you. We could pay the girl who pays Faye £250 to do it. Sammy Agardi got paid £500 to attend the Whitefield Halloween. It's just so funny.
I knew you'd appreciate this article.
The Halloween festival launch.
You do that for free.
Do you know what,
you?
Though? The thing about this is that as a woman, I know. Probably they spent more than £500 on their outfits for this.
I want to know, like...
And their agent's going to take a cut as well. They didn't get £500. They've got to pay taxes on that.
I want to know if they, like, feel any shame when they're doing it.
I would feel...
Like, when Georgia was pushing that button there to turn on the Radcliffe lights, what was going through her head? I thought my life would be all glitz and glamour when I signed up for Corrie.
To switch on the Radcliffe Christmas lights. I don't even know where that is. She's got to get a taxi there and back. That comes out of that money.
It's quite funny... To pay a celebrity money to come to this Halloween festival launch as well. What would you be doing as you were walking around? You'd be constantly looking at your watch, wouldn't you? Like, can I go home now? Getting a bit cold.
It's a bit nippy, and I've worn the wrong outfit.
That was all that was mentioned on that. But
that
I would
so
have loved to have found out more about what Coronation Street people get paid. Because who would you, if you were doing an event like you were a shop and doing a grand opening or whatever, who would you like
Alison
to?
Alison King. If I was doing a shop.
I wonder how much some of them are paid. I'd be interested to see like the scale of, because Alison King would probably charge quite a lot. I mean, more than Georgia May Foote for sure. Who do you think would be the most? Who'd ask for the most?
Jane Dancer.
I bet William Roach is fairly.
William Roach. Do you know what? We should contact their agents and ask them how much we could pay
for them to appear
on the podcast and then do a Kickstarter.
Then
we could have them on the show and be like, do you not think you're worth more than £500?
Well, Podbean, our illustrious podcast host, have recently had a crowdfunding.
Like a Patreon kind of thing.
Application or widget or whatever that you can add to your site. So if we come up with a good enough scheme, then we could set something up and our dear listeners
wonder
could...
how much it costs to get Jack P. Shepherd to do anything.
We've kind of tried on the past to get people. I think when we did the 100th episode, didn't we write to the ITV press room and said, does anybody
want to come in on
or to
our
recognise
show?
That we exist or come on
obviously,
our show or something?
Obviously, we should have enclosed a £5 note so we could get our Jack P. Shepherd. quid to turn up.
Well, maybe we'd have got George Mayfoot back then for 5 quid.
Maybe we could get...
Maybe we'd have got Ardy or Asher or something to do it.
Maybe Rover. Rover's probably the most expensive now.
Probably,
celebrity dog on two fronts, because not only is she in the show, but she's also a celebrity dog owner.
I want to know, like,
do you think you get Simon Gregson for free?
No.
He'd have to come, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Come with him, wouldn't he?
Just
as a dog handler. I think that, like, Eileen Derbyshire, I mean, she's...
I would pay good money to get her to come out of her house.
I know. She doesn't do any publicity for anything. So what would it take to get Eileen to come out? I don't know. I tell you, I bet who gets a lot of money and is a right diva, but... Barbara Knox.
Oh, I bet. Oh, my God. I bet she's...
£1 million to cut a tape or something.
Do you know those people that have the bands that sort of have, like, what they've got to have in their rider, and they're like, we only have blue Skittles or something? Yeah. She'd have a list like that, wouldn't she?
Yeah. Who else is there?
What's the guy who plays Sean again?
Oh, Anthony Cotton.
I bet he is
on a lot. I wonder if, like... You think that, like, somebody like Helen Worth or even Sally Denver or something, who've obviously had a long history in the show, I kind of imagine them, like, being more willing to, like, do it for less or something, because they seem
Do it for less?
Yeah, because they're like, I bet there is a high fee to get those.
I bet
I can imagine they'd be like, oh, it's all right.
I bet you they go to, like, Women's Institute meetings and, like, open the local post office and stuff.
I'll tell you one thing, I bet you on the whole that the women's stars... Get paid a lot more to do it.
Well, there's no men on there at all.
No, exactly. I mean, and yeah, definitely the biggest people are the women. I think William Roach should be quite
Dave
a
McAlpin
lot. But
McAlpin really fleeced them for that 10 grand, didn't he?
I know.
Nice job.
Who else is there that there could be? I'm trying to think who some of the biggest stars would be at the moment.
I
don't think there's anyone bigger than Barbara Knox.
No.
She's got to be the biggest one, doesn't she?
So if I won the lottery, I would hire these... I would hire them all to come to, like, my party.
I'll tell you who might know for Jack P. Shepherd. Do you remember the summer, a few weeks before we started the podcast, he opened a Poundland here in Southampton? And we didn't even know about it until after it happened.
Yeah,
but I bet a Poundland, maybe it would just cost a pound.
No, they probably just said, anything you like in the shop, Jack, whatever you want. You can have two things if you want.
When's the curry person going to come down to Southampton again?
It's a bit far, isn't it? I mean, we've gone.
I don't know why Jack P. Shepherd came down to Southampton
for
to
a pound. It must have been paid 10 grand.
Yeah.
It was a bit random, isn't it?
If any of our listeners have ever paid for a curry star to do anything for them at a function, please do let us know.
Don't let us. If it's like a prostitute thing, don't tell us. Although I'd like to know. I'd like to know the price list.
I wonder whether we could get what's her name? Kim Lomas to sing our, I don't know, something.
Bar mitzvah.
We got our 5-year anniversary this summer. We should have a renewal of vows and get Kim Lomas to sing it.
Can't afford Jenny McAlpin to do anything. She really charges money
to write
a card.
She's in the news this week as well. I'm not even bothered to put in it, but she split up from her boyfriend or something.
Well, you wanted half the money, probably.
Not interested, sorry,
Kim. He was there when we went to a restaurant, wasn't he?
Was he?
It was the one that was hanging on the edge looking...
No, not Jenny McAlpine.
That's what you just said.
No, I didn't. I said Kim Lomas.
Oh.
Kim Marsh, whatever she calls herself these days. She split up from her boyfriend. Tragic. Oh. She's on the front of the news.
Yeah, because Jenny McAlpine just had a baby. So
oh, yeah. And then they split up. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, that was quite interesting.
I like that story. I want to know more about the murky world of the celebrity appearance.
Yeah, but we're talking of celebrity
appearance. That would be a really good Channel 4 documentary.
One like that Dispatchers one where they sung them.
Can you justify your 10 grand, Jenny McAlpine? What have you actually done?
There was also something on the Manchester Evening News about Julie Hesmond-Hall doing some kind of charity something, but I thought we had enough
charity,
news for this
blah,
week.
Blah, blah.
It was something to do with food for charity, and she was working with it, but I don't know whether she did it for free or whether there was a fee.
I think you have to do charity things for free, don't you?
Our podcast could be a charity. Can't we tell
we
people that?
We can set up as a charity.
We got...
What?
Bloke who
get?
Played Derek Wilson
to
do a little quote for our podcast that one time, didn't he? For
did
free.
We?
Yeah, remember Peter Baldwin, that's it. When we did him as a character profile, he wrote to his toy shop and he gave us a quote.
Oh, yeah.
He's the only person.
He's a good
that's
man.
Giving us the time of the day. Oh, no, actually, Sally Ann Matthews did give me those kisses over Twitter.
She did kiss at us on Twitter, yeah.
Yeah.
But she's in that job, so.
Yeah. Maybe she will be on our podcast if she leaves. Don't leave, Jenny. Just don't go psycho.
Okay, that's it.
We've got
a small note about next week.
Yes, next week's Coronation Streets. We've kind of hinted at it already. Big week next week. It is the Who Killed Tina McIntyre week, the sequel, next week. Other exciting things are happening. Big stunts. And it is going to be on at 9 o'clock every day from Monday to Friday. So change your VCRs, anyone that's still using them, and look out for some explosive drama next week at 9 o'clock.
Good Lord.
After Britain's Got Talent. Because it's that time again.
Who cares? We'll be avoiding that.
Lots of people. It gets more viewers than Coronation Street. We should start a Britain's Got Talent podcast. If only we watched it.
Okay. Right, we're going to move on to feedback now.
Okay. Okay, let's round off the episode with a bit of feedback. And first off, I want to say thank you very much to Shayana, who sent us a picture to prove that there is still snow in some parts of Canada at the moment, or there has been recently. So we had that email from her last week where we were completely shocked and stunned that there could still be snow anywhere other than the North Pole at this time of year. She sent us a picture of one taken a few weeks ago. I couldn't do it. I could not live in a place this time of the year. It's still under
this
snow.
Is what
please,
bugs
Canadians,
me.
Just come to Britain. We'll let you in. You like Coronation Street.
This is what bugs me about England and the way people always laugh at us for having rubbish weather.
I know.
It's not that blimmin' bad here.
It's nice at the moment.
It's fine. It just sometimes rains. Like, I assume it rains in every other country in the blimmin' world.
Honestly, it doesn't rain that much here.
No.
But, snow. Oh, blimey, I couldn't do it. But yeah, thank you for the proof.
Everywhere else, in my opinion, is either too hot or too cold.
Just right here.
Just right here.
Yes.
Yep. So, Christina sent us a message, and she said,
I'm getting annoyed that Anna is constantly having a go at Faye. Before she had the baby, Faye could do no wrong in Anna's eyes. I understand that Faye is not taking her responsibilities seriously, but it was Anna who insisted on her keeping the baby. She had never sat down and discussed it properly with her.
I agree.
Her. Yeah, we talked about that a bit in last week's episode, didn't we, when Anna dumped Miley on her at the school gates. I don't remember whether I mentioned on the podcast last time, I've forgotten. That whole go-karting trip, I don't think that Faye would have been able to go there because she didn't get a permission slip signed. I don't think I said that to you at the time, I don't think I said it in the podcast.
Oh, wow, so, it's stupid.
Yet another plotting consistency there. Yeah, I agree about Anna, she is very, very annoying and she hasn't just sat down and... She's just nagging at her, isn't she? Because she's worried that she's...
She's just rubbish. She's being rubbish.
It's because, like, Faye said, oh, I don't want to have this baby. And Anna's now taking the attitude of, you will have this baby and you'll do this and you'll look after this and just get on with it.
You can't force somebody to look after a baby.
I know, I mean, it is Faye's responsibility, but she is only
13,
isn't she?
Well, she did say she didn't want to take it on. And Anna hasn't respected that. And she's belittled her as well. About the fact that she was abandoned as a child, as though now she's somehow morally responsible for taking in any waifs and strays she sees to sort of pay it forward.
Yeah, you'd have thought that if Anna wanted Faye to want to look after this baby, she'd have made it as easy
a bit
for
more
her...
exciting and interesting and...
Yeah, it's just like a slog at the moment, isn't it? So, yeah, I totally agree with you. Christina's also mentioned about the pet discussion. She says, what she was saying about needing a childless female who's spoiled their pet, the ideal candidate for Christina would be Eva. She says, I could imagine her having a little chihuahua or miniature dog that she carries around in her bag. Because this is Coronation Street, whoever she lives with, maybe Jason, is hated by the dog.
Yeah, I can just imagine the entire thing has actually happened.
What's that? Is it Legally Blonde, that film?
Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah, I can completely imagine her with a little dog.
I hate the way they portray chihuahuas on television.
Yeah, Gemma comes from a long line of chihuahua breeders.
They're adorable.
They are cute, having known a few. But I can totally see Eva having intellectual discussions with a tiny-brained chihuahua. that would be perfect. Right, we have got an email from Tivor as well, so thank you, Christina, for writing in. Tivor is back from her wedding, her Doctor Who / Coronation Street wedding. I'm glad it all went well. She has had 2 weeks of Corrie and 2 podcasts to listen to. So, first of Tivor's notes is she loved Gail's reaction to all the crises going on while she was away, just for 1 week. Really finding Sarah and Callum and the whole custody storyline tedious. So that's kind of... I'm still kind of... surprised that I am keeping enjoying it at the moment because I think Callum makes it worth watching.
Yeah.
I can't remember a time when a maternity storyline has been able to carry on for all this time.
Maternity storyline.
You know, Kylie's maternity storyline. This is all this is, isn't it? This is a hold the fort storyline. Well,
yeah, it's actually very well done.
Well, Paul is off on maternity, but I think
and also the good thing about it is that you want her to come back. And when she comes back, she's not just going to be putting her foot in it and ruining all the stuff that's been going on.
No, it's been planned out very, very well, actually.
Yeah, really well.
So I am quite interested in it still, to be honest. And I think if your prediction is right on Friday and he doesn't get his Ritalin, that could be quite funny.
Do you know, it's quite fascinating to think that somewhere out there, will be a person who can say that they were directly responsible for a specific plot on Coronation Street because they were born.
Yeah, that's true. For somebody, the email continues, for someone that worried about her daughter being bullied, Anna sure added fuel to the fire by bringing the baby to Faye at school. I really want Faye to give that baby up for adoption, but can she? She's a minor. Would she be able to, or does Anna, as her legal guardian or mother, have the final say?
I can't imagine that you wouldn't
I don't think she could give it up. I just don't like the idea that the solicitor seems to have abandoned them after Faye clearly didn't want to look after the baby.
I know,
but anyway.
You mean...
The social services.
I just don't think it would work like that. I think if you're a child...
Well, Tibor says that as well. She says that, why doesn't she just call the social services? Because she...
Call Childline or something.
I mean, she originally wanted to abandon this baby on the hospital doorstep in a box. And to be honest, she hasn't grown to love the baby that much more since then.
You don't really see anything about her. She's never hugged it. The only time she was ever happy was when she gave it to Jackson.
Yeah, and she was a bit proud of handing the baby over. But you'd have thought that beforehand she might have just said, well, I'm just going to... The thing is, she couldn't have just left it at the hospital because it would have been obviously be able to be traced back to her at that point, wouldn't she? But
why? Yeah.
Well, because they would have been able to. They'd have had record if she'd have just dumped it at the hospital, not long after it had been born. They would have been all DNA and whatever.
They wouldn't have
known.
How would they have?
Well, she gave birth in the hospital, didn't she? In the end.
Yeah.
So they would have had records. They would have been saying, well, this is the baby that we have.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, so she wouldn't have been able to dump her there, but she could have at least...
No, but her plan was originally to
That they wouldn't have been. But now, she can't just abandon her, but she could try getting this social services woman to come in.
That's obvious.
Sorry. I suspect...
You can't just abandon a baby. Yeah, correct.
Yeah, it's not as easy. I've tried.
What's this about child support?
It is saying that when's the child support going to come through from Jackson and his family?
Yeah, exactly.
Money.
She says, Tivor says, Todd is getting really boring, turning into a one-note petty and nasty character, dare I say it, even more so than Tracy Barlow.
I think that you're absolutely right, because I completely sympathise with Tracy, as nasty as she is. And I really love Liz, but I don't know who I want to win I don't know who I want to win out of Tracy or Liz, because I think that Tracy is brilliant and I like to see her come out on top sometimes, but equally I like to see her sort of fall flat on her face.
Don't forget that all of the fuel for her fire is being inferior and never getting a proper victory out of anything. So if she ever did win, it would totally remove her.
Oh yeah, maybe you're right.
Her reason.
But yeah, I think. But she does have a nice side, doesn't she? And like when there's been when Rob left and coming up soon when Deirdre's gonna die, I think we have more and more sympathy for Tracy as a character. And you're absolutely right, Diane, that Todd is he's not gone
well,
our sympathy
to give
at
him
all.
A bit of sympathy by having his face cut up, and all it's done is just make him look like a little pirate.
Yeah, he is one note petty and nasty, and he doesn't really seem to have
why he's doing
exactly.
That's
what I was going to say. What's his motivation? What's his motivation for turning Eileen against Adrian? What's his motivation for keeping it a secret that he knows that Tracy and Tony are seeing each other? And all these other things he gets to. Is it just he likes to screw up with people? What was his motivation for getting Mary off the street, apart from she didn't give him credit in the shop? Is that it? I know he's just bored. And is he doing it because he's bored? I don't know.
It's very bizarre.
It can't keep going forever, can it? That he just finds more people, more characters whose lives he can screw up. So I hope that they do something more interesting. He needs a partner. A companion that he can talk to so that we can hear his side of the story.
He needs like a parrot to go with his pirate outfit.
Yes. Whenever he talks to anyone, he's just like, he's lying to them all the time. You don't believe him. So he needs some kind of actual confidant, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And that might make him a bit more of a rounded character. Tibor also says that the Sean and Billy story is getting more interesting. I loved that Billy decided to stand up to the bishop. I worried that Billy and Sean didn't seem to have much in common, but maybe Billy will be the making of Sean.
He's definitely made him a more interesting character, isn't he?
Yeah, well, Sean hadn't had a storyline for ages before Billy came along, so I'm hoping that stays as well. I'm also fascinated by the Jenny storyline. We can see Jenny is off the wall, and there's definitely something in her past that's behind this. She's planning something with Jack, but Sophie's the only one who knows something's wrong, and nobody will listen to her. They all think that she's the girl who cried wolf. I'm quite surprised that Jenny's mysterious past hasn't come to light yet, because it's been a good few months since we had the whole "what's our Dex choking" kind of storyline, and they're still at the moment just dropping her in like one episode a week or one episode every couple of weeks, and it's just been a little bit slow. But again, I think next week, possibly from pictures that I've seen, it's going to take a bit more of a turning. We might get to find a bit more there, but it is definitely fascinating. I agree with that. I found it very clever that the solicitor for Travis Limited is called Fox, i.e. in the henhouse. I would have questioned the fact that if Travis had owned a huge chain of pubs and sold it for a fortune, there would have been something about it on them on the internet. Yet Michelle said they couldn't find anything. Would a company that rich really pay cash? I don't know how businesses work, but it's right. It's another symptom of this is all happening a little bit quick, isn't it? Because yeah. I think in real life, you would want to find out more about it.
In real life, you'd be like, well, what other pubs do they own? Give me the name of one. I'm going to phone them up and talk to the people that work there to find out what it's actually like.
I know. I mean, they've just been charmed by this Mr. Fox.
Okay, I believe every word you say, Mr. Fox.
Yeah, it's just not really realistic. No. I'm still interested in the storyline, but yeah, it's a bit silly. Final comment from Tivor is about Maxine's fluffy Persian cat called Bella, because I couldn't remember much about her. Tivor says, Maxine tried to make the cat into a vegetarian, but was told it'd be very bad for the cat. Yeah, because I think Maxine turned vegetarian, and there was the whole silly storyline about, oh, there's the butcher's wife is a vegetarian, and she tried to make him Ashley one as well. After Maxine died, I remember Ashley found the cat on the doorstep a couple of days later, having been forgotten in the upset. I think he must have got rid of the cat because she wasn't seen after that. Well, that's what I think I remember as well. I remember him coming back from somewhere really, really upset, and then Bella was there on the doorstep, and Ashley just like said, scram, get away, I can't deal with you or whatever right now, and he just chased her away, and I was like,
so bloody so tragic, cruel.
So cruel to cats.
String him up by their toenails.
It was very Are You Being Served, with a lot of jokes about Maxine's pussy around the internet. It's nice to have pets in the show, as long as they don't forget all about their existence like they did with Monica. I think Jack and his pigeons are probably my favourite, and Schmeichel was runner-up. I thought the dog in the hot tub scene was really funny. Jack's pigeons are very iconic, but for me, being like a mid-90s onwards watcher, I think Schmeichel pips it, because there were more storylines based around him from there.
Just imagine the person that owned Monica, like, phoning up going, all right, lads, do you need me this week?
No, I'll let you know, we'll let you know. We'll phone you.
No, I'll phone up next week.
I wonder whether the dog, Monica dog, just died and they didn't.
They went, forget it.
We can't have Monica die on the programme, it's going to be too tragic.
It's too sad, I can't remember the right storyline.
Mm. Yes,
so, that was all our feedback. We had quite a lot of feedback.
Yeah, thank you. Considering it was only been a few days since we did the last episode.
We've had loads of questions.
Yes, because next week we are on a little rotation. We're on our listener questions section. So do feed the mailbag if you get any other questions you want to ask us.
And we don't need any now. We've got
next
loads, 4 years.
But we're probably not going to be able to get through them all next week. But we've got some
do one or two a week, not...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've got a good selection. So thanks, really, really thank you for everyone who sent in their questions. So we're going to start off with some of those next week and do a few more next month. But do carry on sending
us
any questions. And there have been some really nice questions. Good questions that have been sent in. Well, we've got a week to plan it. A week and a half to plan it.
I'll be the quiz master and I'll just ask a question and Michael can talk for half an
hour. No, you've got to show what you know about Coronation Street. Give your facts and opinions about it. But yeah, thank you. That is going to be next week's show. If you want to contact us, then we're at conversationstreet@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on our blog at conversationstreet.podbean.com.
You should probably email us to let us know that you've left a message.
We don't like it. The option is still there, as is the option to review us on iTunes, and that's a very good option to do. It only takes a few seconds
to give us 5 stars.
Yes, please do. And you can Skype us. That'd be quite nice as a little 150th anniversary thing to do.
Present, if you haven't bought us anything.
Yeah, we're very, very likely to feature you on our listener questions if you Skype us a message, because it'll be like we're having a conversation to each other.
It's like Conversation Street.
Yeah, that's the idea. Though we're on Twitter, we're at Conversation Strew there, and we're on Facebook as well. Please like us on Facebook if you haven't done so next. So that's it for another week. Thank you for listening. Looking forward to next week. We will be back in a week and a half's time with all the goss and the drama and the opinions from next week's big week on Conversation Street. Say bye-bye, Gemma.
Bye-bye, Gemma. Say bye-bye, Michael.
Bye. Michael. Bye, Michael. Say the music for this episode was sponsored by podcastthemes.com,
sponsored?
Gemma.
Sponsored? What are you
Not sponsored. Provided.
The music for this episode was provided by podcastthemes.com. the end.